Missiles strike now!
Before you start annihilating the thing, why don't we just take a look at it?
Brigadier! Brigadier!
Well, gentlemen, there's your enemy.
We offer a gift, Axonite.
Tremendous advantages for humanity in Axonite.
And unlimited power.
We must have it!
Axonite is bait for human greed.
Claws of Axos are already deeply embedded in the Earth's carcass.
We will consume every particle of energy.
I can defeat Axos, but I must have the Master's help.
Are you suggesting an alliance?
We either escape together, or we die together.
Lies are useless, Time Lord.
No!
We must have the secret of time travel.
Stop!
Hello there and welcome to another episode of Who's to Review, the show where we review classic Doctor Who. I'm your host Tom Denham and I'm joined by
Ben Holt, hello as always.
And today we are reviewing the classic Doctor Who episode, The Claws of Axos.
Now I was very curious, Tom, this was your choice.
It was.
So two episodes ago I chose some Jon Pertwee, a bit of Terror of the Autons. And you weren't pleased with the fact that we kind of ended that show on a bit of a dull note.
Yeah. It was a bit bitter.
Yeah, so it was your choice two episodes later to reintroduce Pertwee, a brand new story. I hadn't seen this one before.
I think we needed to redeem him here.
Yeah, and immediately, I think this one, just straight away, is better than Terror of the Autons.
Absolutely.
Firstly, I love the Axos.
They're great.
I thought it was something out of Goldfinger when I saw those guys appear on the screen. And they were just a hell of a lot of fun. Now, the episode was written by Bob Baker.
Bob Baker.
And Dave Martin.
Yes.
Now, have they done much else for Doctor Who?
Yeah, they've always had quite a prominent writing partnership. So they've written Claws of Axos, The Three Doctors, The Hand of Fear, The Invisible Enemy, Underworld, and The Armageddon Factor. I think that's all of them. And then Bob Baker wrote The Nightmare of Eden on his own.
Ah.
And it's also worth noting Bob Baker wrote all of the Wallace and Gromit stories.
Wallace and Gromit?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, I love that.
All of them except for the first one.
Gee, great childhood memories there.
Oh, fantastic.
Now we'll have a quick look at the plot. A mysterious object approaches Earth, alerting the Doctor and UNIT that they face another possible threat from outer space. Are the gold-skinned aliens who claim to bring great gifts to humanity as peaceful and benevolent as they first appear? And why is the Doctor's arch-enemy, the Master, on board their spaceship? Do you want to take us away on this one?
Yeah, sure. I think I really like this episode. I love it for its weirdness. There were just some moments where we're kind of watching it and we're scratching our heads going, what's going on?
That's right. Yeah, I think there's a nice combination here. I think the incidental music, again, by Dudley Simpson, who seems to do a lot of this era, I'm noticing.
He does,
It's pretty much just keyboard stricken, a lot of the music on here. Mm. But I absolutely dig it. And to make it even weirder is some of these crazy visuals that we get from the 70s.
Yeah,
the absolutely sequences. Mind-boggling visuals.
The sequences we have of the glimpses inside the Axos spaceship when we haven't seen the full ship for the first time and we see, like, Bill in there and then he meets the Master and then we have those, like, hallucinations that Joe has. It's all really, really weird.
I love how they handled the hallucinations too. So many different intricate colours and shapes, and it was quite revolutionary for the time,
I think. It was, yeah.
Yeah. Now, the Master, he has returned again, and I'm noticing he actually appears in a lot of these modern... in a lot of these Jon Pertwee episodes of Doctor Who.
This is like the third story he's been in this season. He was in Terror of the Autons, Mind of Evil, and now he's in this. And I'm pretty sure he's in the one after this as well.
Yeah, I love his presence on screen. I know we mentioned that, you know, two episodes ago.
Mm.
But, gee, what a great actor this guy is too.
Oh, yeah, I definitely think, in my opinion, he is the best master.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He can't be topped.
No.
Yeah. It's a bit of a shame that they could, I guess, in a sense, just, you know, you can't replace someone who's gone
for that
long.
But I guess making him a Time Lord gives you that benefactor that they can regenerate
him. Yeah, that's right. Even in the modern series too, yeah. We're still seeing the master, which is pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah. So no, we should say that while we're recording this, that The Magician's Apprentice is 1 week away.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Just 1 week and we got brand new Series 9.
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah. So I thought it was quite fitting that we watched the John Pertwee and Roger Delgado episode.
Yeah, that's right. It's only fitting to celebrate another new era of Doctor Who. I look forward to it. But going back to the Claws of Axos, I love these claws. I love these crazy monsters. They just looked hilarious to me.
Yeah.
Immediately when we were watching it, I was getting flashbacks of Fenric.
Yes.
The sea beast.
Yeah.
But this is just a bit more of a like dark, browny, grittier kind of looking creature, yeah, this one.
With a whole different intention as well.
Yeah, that's right, I know. And how's how they kill people? The claws would just fly out and next minute, boom!
They string out like spaghetti. Yeah, they would. Mushroom cloud of an explosion.
Yeah, I just don't know whether I want to ever eat spaghetti again after watching this episode. No. It was just, now, one thing I'm really noting about this era of John Pertwee from 1970 to 1974 is just the amount of just hilarity in these episodes. I don't know if it's meant to be this comedic, but
yeah,
for whatever reason, I laugh at this run more than I do any others. And it's not even John Pertwee that makes me laugh. It's just these side characters.
Yeah.
And I think Bill has to get a special mention on this episode.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah. So what did you think of Bill,
Tom? I thought he was a great character that was being developed throughout all four parts of this story. And we didn't know whether he was on the Master's side at first, and then we found out he was working with the Unit and the Doctor, and then we weren't too sure if he was going back to the Master. But yeah, we kind of saw him have this kind of nice relationship with Joe Grant every now and again when they would talk and keep on tabs with each other. But yeah,
there was this key scene midway throughout this story where he's actually getting paralyzed, kind of I can't even think of the word at the moment, it won't come to me, but he's in a bit of a trance. And you just see him, and he's just staring blankly down the barrel of the lens. And you have all this crazy art direction going on,
yeah,
and this funny music. And oh, how we laughed. It just looks
so
funny.
We had to watch
it
like 5 or 6 times.
I know.
Yeah.
Oh, it was just excellent. And then he like morphs into another one of himself as well.
They make a clone.
Yeah, there's a clone. And then there's two of him at the same time.
And that fight sequence that he had with him,
that was awesome.
That was very well directed by Havoc.
Yeah. Oh, it was just awesome stuff. Mm. Now, where does this sit in John Pertwee's run?
People wouldn't say it's their favourite John Pertwee. They'd kind of be more partial to go to stories like Inferno or The Time Warrior or maybe even Planet of the Spiders. But I'd say this is kind of midway in from best to worst. I definitely think people have an appreciation for Bob Baker and Dave Martin. And they've definitely done the job here. They've captured Pertwee, they've captured the whole Unit family and the Master. So I think they've really done the job here. And I think this is definitely one that people should watch.
Yeah, I think the writing does really fit this era.
It does.
I love the overall story that's happening throughout John Pertwee, how the Time Lords have like centered him to
the exile.
Exile. So he's stuck on Earth. He can't get away. Which is why I like in this story how him and the Master are trying to get the TARDIS back up and running. And they're kind of working together in a really odd, peculiar sense.
Yeah, and you get little trickles of that throughout all of Pertwee's run. You don't know whether they're going to work together or not. And then they decide, okay, we're going to leave these bastards here on Earth. Goodbye.
I know, and it almost seemed like the Doctor had turned into a bad guy, didn't he? He's like, no, we're leaving. Goodbye, Brigadier.
It kind of makes you think about the whole underlying theme that's been going through Series 8, where Capaldi's Doctor's been questioning whether he's a good man.
Yeah. It harkens back even to these early 70s.
It does.
With this kind of stuff. Now, the Claws of Axos, of course, it's on DVD. We pulled it out of Tom's collection like we always love to do. Is it easy to find at the shops?
It's relatively easy to find. I guess it's more easier to find the special edition. I got the original DVD release because it was cheaper and I'm an art student. But Looking at the cover, I definitely think I prefer this cover in opposed to the special edition one. It's got a really nice kind of golden look to it, and you've got the Axos on there, and you've got the Master as well. Yeah, there's just something really attractive about that artwork by...
Yeah, I think it's a... it is quite a nice colour scheme, that's
pretty
for sure.
It's by Clayton Hickman, but but yeah, it's got a very nice soft feel, whereas a lot of the other DVDs have a bit more of a darker kind of feel.
Yeah, them. I agree, yeah. It looks a bit more friendly, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Sits nicely on the shelf anyway.
It does, yeah. Yeah, I definitely love the spine for it as well. It has that kind of orangey gold feel.
And I think when you look at this DVD cover, it kind of gives away what the actual production design and art direction of this story was. And it was very golden, kind of bright, earthy type. Yeah.
I guess that's what the DVD art does so well. It kind of does a full circle of what the story is going to be on the cover. Like, you have the Master, you have the Axos when they're the gold people, and then you have them turning into spaghetti people.
Yeah, I love it. Nah, it's awesome.
Well, not really spaghetti people, but
they look a little bit like...
Yeah, we shouldn't confuse our audience like that.
No, I know. We're getting better, what can I say?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, with this story being four parts, did it need to be longer? Did it need to be shorter?
I think it was at a good pace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel the same way, I think.
I feel like most Pertwees at this time, bar season finales... all four-parters. Except season 7, which was John Pertwee's first season, I think from there on, most of them are all four or six-parters. And I definitely think that format works really well for the whole unit setting. Normally, if there's like a six or seven-parter in Who, they kind of go from one place to the next for the next three or so parts. But I definitely think the four-part works for Claws of Axos and for a lot of other John Pertwee stories.
Yeah, I like the fact that it did stay focused the whole time on the Axos, and we didn't just trail off and...
No, which is very easy to...
Yeah, that's
with
right.
With the amount of cast that you have in these classic episodes, it's very easy to just trail off into another character's life, like what happened in Tower of the Autons with John and the troll doll.
Oh, yes, one of my all-time favourite scenes.
Yeah.
That's probably something, because the last few episodes we have so happened to watch, our last few stories, there's been this massive ensemble cast.
Yeah.
Whereas here, I thought we were a bit more limited in the amount of characters we had. Yeah, and for a change, I liked it. I kind of like the fact that we weren't swarmed with 500 billion different people.
Yeah, it's a kind of bit of a refresher, if you like.
Mm.
And I definitely think it's healthy that Who do this every now and again. And that not every story has to be character-driven. It can be plot-driven. And in this case, the plot definitely takes the lead.
And was that a sign of this era? Was there not as many characters as we got, say, in McCoy's Run or Colin Baker's?
I definitely think Pertwee had a lot of characters in his run. And one of the things I love about Pertwee's run is the consistency of the people coming back in every episode. So you have the Doctor, the Brigadier...
Mike Yates.
Yeah, Mike Yates, Sergeant Benton, the Master, Joe, Sarah Jane Smith...
It's a good cast, isn't it? It's a strong cast.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with it, I think.
Yeah, I'm a massive James Bond fan, and every time I watch a bit of Pertwee, I always get a bit of a Bond-esque vibe.
I think we all do, yeah. I definitely get a bit of a Roger Moore feel when I watch it.
Yeah, I don't know, there's something about it that really speaks to me in that way when I watch these episodes, whereas I don't really get that with many other Doctors.
No, I definitely think one of the reasons for that is the Earth limitation to it. I also think John Pertwee is very suave in his acting.
Yeah, he's excellent, isn't he?
And he's a lover of fast cars as well, so...
That's right, yeah. It's kind of the first time the car was ever used in Doctor Who, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. He kind of had that one to himself for memory.
Tom Baker got it in his run for one story. I think for his first story... And Sylvester McCoy got to use it in Battlefield.
Yeah, that's right. I do recall that, actually. Yeah.
I love that bit in Battlefield where Ace is joking about the car and then he drives off.
Just drives off with it.
And then there's the flames on the ground to show how fast it's gone.
That's awesome. Yeah. Battlefield, that's another classic episode. So what were some lowlights for you? Were there just some things in this story that just rubbed you the wrong way or that you didn't like?
I don't necessarily think so for this one. I definitely think... Bob Baker and Dave Martin's writing was definitely very good. I don't think there's anything that really turned me off. If there's anything that I can change about this story, although I love Pertwee and everyone in it, I'd make it a Davison story merely for the production values.
Right, okay. Yeah. Oh, that's fascinating.
A Davison or 80s story, so the production values could get a bit boosted up. I remember listening to a Big Finish audio, which is a sequel to this one, and I think the visuals in my mind were a bit more stronger than what I was seeing on screen.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, yeah. It kind of... I guess, you know, they had a bit of a strict budget at the time. And I think they did well with what they
could. They did well enough. Like,
yeah. It still captured my imagination.
It did. Yeah, same.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I got to say, I'm probably similar to you. There was nothing that really annoyed me watching this story. There was nothing kind of missing or that I thought, you know, that was pointless or anything. It all seemed to work.
Yeah.
As one nice hour and 37 minute story. But... I guess some highlights now. One of mine, it was actually that captain eating chicken, and I've just gone blank on that gentleman's name.
That was Horatio Chim.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because he was the Minister of Defence.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was pretty funny. He was a bit of a character, really.
He was, and I don't think he died in this one.
No, he didn't, but he got hit pretty badly towards the end by the Axos.
One of my favourite scenes with him in this story is when he's on the phone to the Ministry of Defence, and you can hear the other guy on the end of the phone, and he goes, "It's your head on the chopping block, not mine." And then he uses the same line. It's a Bill, I think.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he uses the same line, the Bill, later on.
Yeah.
Yeah, God, this character was a classic. One of my personal favourite moments of him was just when he was eating chicken.
Just out of the blue. He just looked like the Colonel from Kentucky Fried Chicken.
I know. I thought that it was like a free advertisement for them. But, that was really funny. He was a... absolute classic.
Yeah.
I feel it was a wasted opportunity not to bring him back if this is his only appearance. Man.
It would have been so great if, like, there were just these alien invasions or occupations going on, and out of the blue he just walks in and goes, "Now, Brigadier, this is going on, and I'm not very happy. Why is this doing this? Why is this doctor fellow still here?"
Oh, it would have been awesome. Yeah. It was a missed opportunity. I think they should have definitely brought him back towards the end of Pertwee's run.
Yeah.
Somehow. I think that would have been awesome. So, Tom, you are now pretty much, you've seen most of John Pertwee's stuff.
Yep.
And The Claws of Axos, is it essential viewing for our listeners?
I think it is essential viewing. I definitely don't think it's the first one you should go to. If you're going into Pertwee fresh, I'd say either try The Three Doctors or Spearhead from Space. But maybe once you've watched maybe two or three stories, definitely go for The Claws of the Axos.
Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful. And the Master, he shall return.
Yes, as always. And I think in the episode immediately after this one.
Yeah. So is there any things that you have to get off your chest about this story at this point in time?
I think I've only just really thought of another problem I had with this story. There were definitely points where we're agreeing with this. That the Master was just kind of walking around.
Yes. Why? It felt so odd to me that the Master did not seem threatening at all.
Yeah. Because it was a lot more threatening in Terror of the Autons.
Yeah, in Terror of the Autons, you kind of feared him, which is how I'm always used to the Master being. But in this, it was almost just like he was just another character. He was just walking around. Yeah.
I just love that bit where there's that unit guard and he just donks him on the head or shoots him with the laser gun.
That's right.
And he just kind of surreptitiously walks off again. And that bit where he jumps onto that lorry.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, no, it was all classic stuff. Yeah. It was just odd that they decided to go with the fact that, you know, he didn't come across
it
all
that kind of
scary.
Felt like that he had to be there.
Yeah.
And I guess Bob Baker and Dave Martin might have been told by Barry Letts, the producer at the time, we've got to have the Master in this story, and they're kind of going, okay, so how can we fit him in?
Yeah, I reckon it almost seems as if the story was done and then they got told off. Throw him in. That's how it felt to me. He didn't drive the narrative.
No.
He was more of just like a side character that filled a couple of gaps, I guess.
I felt the same for Joe Grant as well.
Yes, Joe. Now that's worth talking about. She just felt like a body in the room. She did not much at all.
No, she was kind of helping the Doctor out here and there and helping the Brigadier and Mike Yates, but nothing else.
No. Like, you know, if this podcast was dedicated to talking about Joe and the Claws of Axos, I don't think we could talk about her for more than 2 minutes.
It would just be 30 seconds of silence.
Yeah, it's so bizarre. Like, why was she not used much? I don't understand.
I definitely think one of the main syndromes of this is that it's such a plot-driven story. And I guess poor old Mr. Baker and Marston kind of forgot about one of their characters and they're just kind of tagging along with the rest of the team.
Well, it really felt like that they forgot. It's like two of the main characters in this story were almost non-factors.
Yeah.
And yet it was still really good.
Yeah. When you're watching this story, with that in account, who do you kind of see the main characters at story?
Well, to be honest, like apart from John Pertwee, I think Bill.
Yeah.
I think Bill and the Axos are like the two main characters of this story.
Yeah.
Which I think is pretty cool. It's good to give someone else a bit of a turn.
Definitely,
in
yeah.
the spotlight, yeah.
Yeah.
And that haircut of Bill, played by Paul Grist, is just hilarious.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a 70s haircut.
I definitely felt... I'm not too sure if you would agree with me, but I felt that accent kind of slip every now and again.
Yeah, it sounded a bit fake, didn't it?
Yeah.
And we were just talking about these kind of American accents just from the previous episode.
Yes.
With Colin Baker's one with Perry, and just the character of Perry in general, how her accent just felt off at times. So did this. I caught him a few times and went, it's starting to crack.
Yeah, I got it too.
Yeah, okay. I was wondering if it was just me, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, well, he was trying his best, I
but
guess.
Yeah, he definitely... he was consistent throughout all four parts. Yeah, in his acting.
Yeah.
Not necessarily his voice acting.
One part I particularly dug in this story was when he had a bit of a standoff with the Brigadier over the Master.
Yeah.
And he wanted the Master dead. But then, you know... Obviously, the Master trying to help them out.
Was that in the fourth part?
It was. It was towards the end. I thought that was a really cool scene.
Yeah.
And how was the massive fight that happened at the end? Oh, and next minute you have, you know, maybe 20 or so goons from UNIT. They're all running to one side. And then a scientist just randomly walks in the frame. That was... I love that.
He just came out of nowhere.
I don't know where he was. Yeah. Had he been there the whole time or...
It was probably just some amateur act, and he goes, "Oh, Doctor Who, I want to be in this."
Oh my goodness! Oh, it was funny stuff.
Yeah,
so, yeah. Props to that guy getting in the shot.
Yeah,
but he was there to tell us about the speed of light.
It was probably famous. He's probably at conventions now, getting the autographs.
Oh, you reckon?
I was in the Claws of Axos.
Yeah, I was in. I had a couple of lines.
Probably not.
Maybe not. But yeah, he had his. Couple of seconds. It wasn't even 15 seconds of fame.
Might have been one.
But you and I dug it. So
we did.
That's all that mattered.
Kudos to you, science man.
Yeah. Well done, science man. You're gonna have good scientists in your stories.
Every Doctor Who story has a good scientist.
So here we are. It's the Claws of Axos. You can find it at pretty much all your DVD retailers.
JB, ABC.
Yeah.
Wherever you like.
And I had a great time with this. Now, is there anything else to get off your chest about the Claws of Axos?
I don't think so. I think we've come to a good closure with it.
Yeah. It's one of those stories that, while it was good, there's not a lot you can talk about for a long period of time. Because, really, we don't really move all that far, do we? I mean, we start at the UNIT headquarters.
Yep.
And then the Axos kind of just arrive.
Yep.
And then that's it.
Yep.
It's kind of, we just go inside and...
That's setting for your story.
Check out what they're doing and...
That's another thing I should mention just before we wrap up. I love the set design of the Axon spaceship.
Yes, it was pretty cool looking, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a production value worth noting.
And one random thing. Did you like the old geezer that's on his bike at the start of this episode?
Yeah. It was kind of thrown in there.
Yeah, he just added a little bit extra, but really it was just a setup.
Yeah.
The Axos, wasn't it? I notice a lot of early classic Doctor Who always has this really weird side character that's only purpose is to just set up the enemy and get killed at the start.
I love those characters. They're my personal favourites. If you could make like a compilation, if someone out there could make a compilation of these characters dying, I'd love you.
Yeah, it's just, you know, almost every episode, it feels it's not quite true. But okay, so out of 10, Tom, what are you going to give The Claws of Axos, John Pertwee?
I'm going to give it a 6.5.
A 6.5?
Yeah.
Right. Now, what did you give Terror of the Autons? I remember you weren't all that high on that either.
I think I gave that one a 4 or 5.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's really interesting because you were telling me all week long, oh, you know, we didn't... John Pertwee needs to be redeemed.
Yeah.
We need to see a better episode. And then I hear you say it's a 6.5 and it was your choice.
Well, I see 6.5 as a positive. It's at the positive end of the spectrum. So it's kind of leaning towards a 7.
So what you're telling me is that there's a lot of better John Pertwee to come.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
And what would those be? Some of those top ones?
Definitely 10 out of 10.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. And what stories? Like Inferno or something like that?
Inferno, Mind of Evil.
Oh, right. Yeah.
All of those. Mm. The Time Warrior.
Yeah.
It's plenty to look forward to.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Plenty of time, too. Luckily. Yeah, I mean, as far as I'd have to give this story, I'm going to go with a 7.
That's a good prime number.
Yeah, look,
I'm not so sure if it's a prime number,
Well, look, I was entertained the whole time. I was never bored, and in my mind, if I can get through a whole story, that's cool.
I'm happy
with that. If I'm entertained, I enjoy myself. Got a few cheap laughs here and there.
We do.
We do. Special mention to Bill. looking as comedic as ever. Now, that was episode 6 of Who's to Review, The Claws of Axos. And, of course, Tom's going to fill you in, but you can find us at multiple locations.
Yes, you can. First of all, you can find us on our Facebook page at Who's to Review, and you can also find us on our blogspot at whostoreview.blogspot.com.au. You can also email us if you have any questions at whostoreviewdoctorwho@gmail.com, and you can listen to us on iTunes and SoundCloud at Who's to Review Classic Doctor Who.
And going back to the email, yes, anything you like. Email us a question that didn't make sense on one of the episodes you watched. Perhaps you would like to be a guest on our show one day, and we'd be delighted to have you within reason, of course. Mm. And obviously, let us know. Is there an episode you want us to review? You're dying to hear our thoughts on it?
Yeah.
Let us know, and we will make it happen. Well, hopefully. I mean, between us, we almost have all of them now. We're not far off.
No, not at all.
Yeah. So until next time, guys, we hope you take care. Take it easy.
We'll do.
Enjoy yourself.
Thank you.
And we'll be back next Sunday with a brand new episode of Who's to Review. And we're not going to say what we're reviewing just yet, but it will be a brand new Doctor that we haven't reviewed before.
Who would be?
Who will be, Tom?
Keep guessing. Keep guessing. We'll post another funny photo up to keep you entertained.
Yes, that's right. There'll be photos up every week, and make sure to try and guess what it's going to be. But until next time, take care, guys.
Goodbye.